Hello world, my name is Klaus Rosten and I'm the director of the College of Extraordinary Experiences. You're listening to the Business of Extraordinary Experiences. Today, we're doing a deep dive into the world of creative business startups and taking an in-depth look at the story of an awesome Finnish company. And to help me with that, we have a very special co-host today. Vera Schneider not only sounds like a German general, but she started her entrepreneurial journey more than 10 years ago. And this isn't her first rodeo, as they say. Today, she's the CEO and one of the founders of Beyond Play, a design studio that creates immersive, playful, and participatory experiences. Vera, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Klaus. I'm happy that you invited me.
So am I. So, Vera, let's talk Corona and let's talk startup, and especially let's talk Beyond Play. First, give us a little bit of quick backstory on Beyond Play, because that is pretty cool in itself.
Okay, so where to start? We go back as Beyond Play. We go back 1.5 years. We founded a company early 2019 with Mike Pohjola, a transmedia designer, game designer, and script writer from Finland here. And we both have a very strong background in designing LARPs and producing LARPs. And myself, I have very, I have a long history of working towards doing this professionally, and use my professional education and experience to, take it a notch further for myself. And Beyond Play was kind of this culmination of finally getting to do the thing, and so we kind of jumped into the deep end. We felt it was the right time too. Immersive experiences and games and role play had started to gain more recognition in Finland and elsewhere too, but in Finland it's a unique thing. And we felt that now is the time to kind of move things forward and do this company thing here. And after the first maybe 6 months, we started to conceptualize our current project, and we will get to the later parts maybe soon, but it's been an interesting journey so far. We are a rather unique company, I feel, here in Finland, but that makes it all the more interesting to be in this situation now.
And you have this, I mean, you're not only in a creative space, but one of the things I remember from when we talked about this some time ago is that you're in a space for creative business that doesn't really exist. This sort of category isn't really a thing in kind of Finnish business circles. And that was one thing that I found fascinating, that we often look at as industries. We look at, like, are you in the hospitality industry? Or are you in the transportation industry? Or in the something. And here, what you told me then was basically, Klaus, we're creating an industry because this doesn't have a category of its own. How, before we get to the spaceship, yes, there will be a spaceship. Before we get to the spaceship, tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's true. And that's basically also where we started before we went into our current project, was mapping out where we fit in. So basically, if you want to do game development as a business, you would want some support from the system as well for that. And to get that, you need to understand where you fit in. And in this process of finding out where we fit in, we found out that we don't. So are we doing theater? Are we doing art? Are we doing scalable business? Are we doing games? Yes to all of those, I say. And that's where we confuse people. So we want to approach this as something where we can do business that can grow, that can make sense, that can evolve and not be based on one thing for its entire existence. But also we don't want to compromise on experience and on the game side, on the live experience that we want to create. And this is Finland is a country that puts a lot of emphasis in supporting game businesses. It's worked very well for the state so far, and they have a very nimble system of pushing game businesses out there. And immersive technology has kind of gained almost a similar foothold lately. So this has then taken the question, what do you count as immersive content and immersive technologies? And we kind of latched onto that, that you can't push us out of this equation just because we do not use VR or AR to do our thing. We are still, we do immersive games. We still come into the equation. We make meaningful contents. Our platform is based on a live space, sure. But we know we can do that scalably. It's this is the thing that's baffling, I think, for people who fund businesses, is that that people would like to kind of that they are shifting their behavior from just buying another game for your mobile to wanting to invest in experiences. And I think they are hesitant to kind of give that sort of innovative approach to that side of the business, kind of life-based business, a chance. But we've worked hard on talking to people and getting them to understand the evolution that we have seen happening, and to which we have also gotten a lot of validation. So I think we, our years worth of work on that has been good. It's not nearly done, and I think we have most definitely probably taken a couple of steps back thanks to the pandemic, kind of shaking up people's priorities, but work never stops, so we'll just continue on that.
You hit on something that I think is very universal, that a lot of startups, whether no matter what space they're in, they want to do something that either changes a space, like changes a business or an industry, or creates a new one. And when you go to people and say, we want your money and support, of course they ask, what kind of business are you? And you say, well, we're this kind of business, and say, oh, we don't want to support that because that's already full. But then you say, no, we're not that, we're this. And they say, oh, we can't support that because we don't understand what that is. Mm. And I guess the journey you've been in, and I recognize some of that myself, is that on one hand, you need to be recognizable so people can trust you and feel safe. On the other hand, you need to be different so people can see there's an idea in it, and that you're not just another mobile company that does it like all the others, because even the mobile companies say, we do it differently.
Yeah, that's very true. And kind of, we can't kind of blame the people making these decisions on not understanding it when it comes from the first people trying to pitch it. They have a certain mindset, and we have had to search for the right ways to simplify our thing. And it's also good that they force us to do that, because it's it makes our own thing better to have to go over it again and again. So of course it's iteration, and it's always good, also always frustrating. But yeah, I think what is unique for this kind of a life-based creativity is that it combines so many disciplines. And that's, I think, confusing for some people, is that we are not only considering building a space and building kind of this customer front and this live experience, but then we also need to work hard on how we want to make it nimble on the back end of things. So how we want to manage it from the other side of the action, and what kind of tech we need for that, and it actually doesn't exist, and then we would need to pitch ourselves as a company who wants to do tech, and then they are like, what are you doing, like live theater? And we're like, yeah, sort of, kind of not.
Yes, and but let's make that understandable for people. Let's talk about the spaceship.
Yeah,
tell me about the spaceship there.
All right. Yeah, we are actually a couple of weeks away from starting to build our spaceship. This is something that I think a lot of the people in our team have dreamt of doing in one way or another for a long time. And that is taking the immersive 360 experience of a very well-designed LARP space, condensing it down and making it into kind of a, not a, like a game console, you know, but sure. just step inside of it. And you are able to use it as a platform for multiple games.
So just to make it very clear what we're talking about, you're talking about a physical space that you step into that is as if you'd step down to a spaceship.
Yeah, we want to make it, well, of course, in the realms of possibility, as believable as we can. So it's responsive with lights and sound and a simulator for space battle and navigation and stuff. But it's a physical space. You can touch everything. You can use the space as you would an actual space. Barring the fact that it's staged, but we want to make it layered so you can kind of dig into it a little bit. But on the background, it's designed so that we can create new scenarios that are run with the same space and the same tech. So why it's a spaceship is actually very simple. We started with this concept because it's something where it makes sense that you would explore endless opportunities in one space. So story-wise, it's pretty easy to imagine that you would see all of the crazy things, have all of the crazy adventures and never leave the space shuttle. Sure. So there are certainly other story formats you could use this kind of game room concept for, but this is something that we had a blueprint for. A lot of us were part of making Odysseus the LARP last year. So we have some of the crew working for us in this company, and we all felt quite at home with the idea of a spaceship.
The spaceship is cool. Tell me, because one way of looking at this, if let's say I'd been in the airline industry, I'd say, okay, that sounds exciting. That's a flight simulator, except here it's a spaceship simulator, and it's not for technical training because we don't really have that many spaceships while we have a lot of airplanes. But how is it different from a flight simulator or the simulator of the bridge of a big mass container ship? Mm.
Yeah, of course, those don't have a story per se. We combine
shots fired.
Yeah. so we don't base it on just sitting in front of stations and firing at things. We have a world. We have a backstory for everything that exists. Everything is designed the way it is for it to fit the story that we have. And these players, and they don't need to have any LARPing experience or role-playing experience. They can be themselves in there, but they will, because of the frame story, automatically have to kind of step into the shoes of someone who's in the space shuttle, make decisions on what to do next, where to steer the situation. And there are multiple options where they can take it. So we are not doing linearity here. And this is important to say because people like to think of this as an escape room, which is basically physically you can use that as something to compare it to. So it's understandable because it already exists and it uses many, many higher quality escape rooms attempt some non-linearity in their puzzle design. They have frame stories. They have a good production values in the space, but they do not, in fact, usually use this kind of open decision-making storylines. So we do that. Of course, we branch them that like you would a non-linear game script. So we can't make, no one can design and complete a completely open-ended game like this. But like you would in a LARP, you don't script everything that the players go through emotionally or discuss between themselves and that and how they come to the conclusions that they do. So that in itself already makes it more like a LARP, even if it's even if it's clockwork. It's a unique experience every time.
I love that. And it also means that when I'm looking at my watch, I realize I got sidetracked because I want to know more about the spaceship and the actual part. We are here to talk about Corona as well. And,
yeah.
And I've been forgetting that because I thought this was interesting in itself. But the title, excuse us, listeners, is about Corona and how it has impacted this. Mm-hmm. And what you're designing is a live spaceship experience in physical space. I'm pretty sure there's been some sort of impact to your plans because of this. Tell us more.
Yeah, you could say that. we started 2020 in a situation where we just put together part of the team and they started working, I think, early February. February, we finally got the second team member on board, and we had a game designer already before that. And then we started the work on the tech and everything, and we got our commercial partner and space secured, and had the complete process mapped out from pre-production to build and release. And there were all kinds of events, as you know. You were invited to said event and playtest periods and like building partners involved, and all of it was, it was good. And then came March, and at this point we were 1 month away from starting the first iteration of the build. So originally we were going to make a kind of a dumbed down version for kind of developing the game content further before then going into the final build.
Well, that's smart. So you were planning on building a half finished, or so to speak, prototype, and then knowing that you'd learn things, you're going to expand for the final version.
Yeah, that was our plan. Yeah,
I love that.
That was not come to pass. Our commercial partner is Prime Hotels, which is a chain of hotels located all around Helsinki and Finland, and they have a long history of partnering up with experience companies.
Mm-hmm.
They have under all of these kind of associated companies that they have a couple of escape rooms that work with them, and one of the spaces that they had previously had a escape room in had become vacant, and so they loved our concept, we loved them, and all of that. But then of course the hotels had to close very quickly, so while if our space would have been somewhere else, we might have, if it would have been ours, just ours, with our own access to it, we might have to some extent being able to build it, even despite the pandemic. But the hotel closed completely for months and we couldn't do that. And thanks to this same situation, our building partner was one of the local vocational colleges, which we had partnered up with before in Odysseus, so members of our team had very good experiences of giving over some of the fruit work of making the structures to them. That didn't happen, of course. Schools closed very soon after. Our processes of getting funding completely screeched to a halt because all of the funding parties, of course, ended work on those and started to hand out the emergency funds. So well, that came to a halt. And of course, we were forced to stop working at the office. And that meant even the crew playtesting that we had wasn't very easily done. So we didn't, I think we maybe had one remote testing of the ship system during the entire spring. And that, I don't think that was very productive because this is a life-based game. You don't actually get a lot of input from testing remotely. So we went ahead with most of the team for nearly a month, and then we were forced to say, okay, this is escalating, the pandemic is getting worse, we are treading water, we do not know when we can move ahead, and we have to cut people off. So we laid off all but one. And this was 2 months into the process of having a company.
Ouch, ouch, ouch. Yeah.
So that was kind of, I didn't have a choice in that, actually. A couple of the co-workers even asked for it. but it was kind of it hurt my pride a little bit, because I had at that stage worked a year to get people employed in this field in Finland. And once it had just happened, I had to let it go. We then decided that it might still happen that the autumn is a good time to open. So we decided to come up with a plan where we could still open up maybe a month later than we originally intended, because the autumn is a prime season for these kinds of games. They are sold a lot to companies, and that's also what our commercial partner wants us to do, is to be part of the service that they offer. So we made that our goal and started a Mecenaatti, which is a crowdfunding platform in Finland, Mecenaatti campaign to at least gather some funds. And it's not a very effective platform because it's very, very local. But we did that and it was good for us. We got some recognition. We got some. We got a good social media campaign out of that, and it actually also financially bounced us back from some of the losses that we had to take from the spring. And now we are back at it. We had to cut away the entire first iteration stage of building a dumped down version.
Oh, that's a shame. Yeah. Because that's so cool.
Yeah, it is. We have made paper prototyping at our office. Instead, you should see the cardboard stations that we've set up. They are pretty cool.
I love that.
We actually paper prototyped an entire spaceship, or our team did. They are pretty awesome at that. But we are now going straight into the final build. I am using this quote marks for those who don't see, because we feel that we can with time improve some of the things that we do now. That would have probably been the case anyway, but now especially we feel that it is important for us to make the room happen as well as we can. But there will definitely, thanks to this, be something that we will have to kind of catch up with later. Because all of the kind of roadmaps we had for also for in terms of developing our cash flow and doing other work as well, me and Mike are also doing other things on top of just managing the company. So we have a team that is fully employed in doing this game room, and we are less so involved in that. So we would have done something else as well during this time, which we did not. And we were not able to apply for the funds that we wanted. We were not able to do any of the promotional things that we wanted. So I think that is the actual loss from this. It's not that we have to make compromises on the game room and have it a month or a little over a month late. The real loss is that we are rebooted in many other aspects. And it was also a very sad time to be a startup entrepreneur in this field during the time of all of the emergency funds, which were very hastily put up in Finland. Because it's not just us and the field that we are in, but the creative industry in general was overlooked pretty badly. And startups who are in the process of developing their first products were completely left out of the loop. So it was as crude as the system saying, what you are doing does not qualify as business. We do not support you because we do not actually believe you are viable because you are in the process of making it happen. So,
wow. That must have been fun.
Yeah, no.
no, that must have been terrible.
it would have been even okay to handle it because you can kind of, in a situation like that, you can't just fund everything. And, you know, any sensible person doing business understands that from the funder's point of view. It's not personal. You're not supposed to get offended by that. If this would have been said clearly in kind of the prerequisite for applying for these funds, it would have been perfectly fine. Then I wouldn't have spent my time on this thing. But these things were not entirely opened up in some of the funding instruments when they were set up. They were just open crisis funding for kind of development projects that will make up for the losses. Apply. That was all it said. And
that's not a lot, no.
Yeah, no. They went back and kind of wrote in the rules after people had already spent time filling out the applications. And they even, I think, distributed some funds before they made decisions on how they are distributed. So it made for unfair.
Sure, and they were doing the best they could. But
that's
something that I find pretty fascinating is this. We talked earlier about this fitting into the right boxes, and here you have some boxes that are set up pretty fast. Nobody really knows what the boxes are, not even the people who created the boxes. Yeah. And here you kind of hit on the founder's dilemma a bit, that you're constantly, as a startup founder, you're trying to figure out, do I fit this box? Is this worthwhile? Should I use energy on pursuing this thing? Maybe it'll give money or options or something else. And if you know this is only for agricultural companies from France, then you're not going to spend your time on it unless you are one of these. But often it's like, this is for companies that might be like you. And then you spend the time and then they say, yeah, it's actually mostly for agricultural companies from France. And I guess there's a lot of that, especially in this sort of time. And we're nearing the half hour mark, so I want to ask you one very pointed question, because Corona has, of course, been tricky for any kind of startup, especially with like rules and changes and people being afraid and what are we going to do and layoffs and all that. What is the most positive thing you take away from it? What's been the thing that you and the team have said, wow, we would never have learned this really cool thing if it wasn't for Corona?
Well, that's a very, 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 very good and hard question. I think the thing that kind of we have looked at as a silver lining is the fact that we had very little of the work done before we wanted to test the viability of just the game structure. And we backtracked on that and started to do world building first. And of course, the game structure was already pretty developed at that point, but we kind of took a side process and started to make them simultaneously. And that ended up being a very good thing. Basically, it has solidified the story, but also because we now recognized very fast that we are entering a new time in our societies thanks to this pandemic. It's not just during the pandemic, but we go into a new and reshaped world afterwards. And now we were kind of smacked with the opportunity of designing something that would talk to the people in that society. So we went into the process of trying to project where we might end up, what we might want to play, what kind of stories we'd like to experience in that time. And we have used that as a foothold for what Out of Orbit, so what, that's our game group's name, what the story of Out of Orbit is, ultimately. So I think that is the thing that we have taken away from this, is the opportunity to write for the Commonwealth, so to say.
I think that's a pretty nice quote to stop on. Writing for the coming world. That's nice. We'll end this on that pretty powerful quote. You have heard, all of you out there, first we want to say thanks for listening, and second, you've heard Vera Schneider, and you have heard me, Klaus Wastin. This is The End, and thank you for listening.